Welcome to another episode of the WNIJ Poetically Yours Extended Podcast. I'm Yvonne Booz. Every Friday, you get an earful of stanzas written by local poets. This podcast gives you the time to take in more and maybe find a deeper connection with the artist. This month's featured guest is Christopher D. Sims. In this episode, Christopher shares his experiences working for different nonprofits in other states and his journey back home to Rockford. And we discuss his thoughts about the social justice climate 4 years after the death of George Floyd. Take a listen. All right, Christopher, this is your second time on the Poetically Yours Extended Podcast. You're the first person to be on here two times. So that's exciting for me. I know you have a lot of things going on. How long have you been back in Rockford? Remind me.
It's been a little over a year now. I think I made it back here May of last year. So actually it's been right at a year.
Okay, let's talk about that journey. Why did you move in the first place?
I got a job down in Charlottesville, Virginia at a nonprofit called Cultivate Charlottesville. So I was initiated as a program director there and worked that job for not a long time, but enough. And then what I did come to realize too, I think even as I was driving back home from Charlottesville, is that that's where some of my earliest roots as a Sims in this country began. So I think the ancestors led me down there to unearth that and to get proximate with the state of Virginia like I did. And I'm glad I did.
Now, I see that you go back and do shows somewhere else. Where is that at? And why do you continue to? And I can't remember where it was off the top of my head, but I know it was a place that you were living when you were making that transition, but you still go down there and do shows.
I want to say Memphis, but I haven't been back to Memphis in a while. So where else would that be? I mean, yeah, I got places where I definitely travel back to and do shows. But I was just in Springfield, Illinois, not for a particular show, but to judge the statewide Poetry Out Loud contest. And that was the first time I did that. And that was great.
Tell me more about that. How did you get... how were you chosen to do that? Is that something that you had to sign up for, or did somebody reach out to you and say, hey, we want you to do this?
I guess they vet all of the judges that they reach out to ask to be a judge. So I was vetted by Sheila Walk, who is she works at the Arts Council down in Springfield, and reached out to me and asked me, did I want to be a judge? So I guess she had already done their homework, or the state did the homework for her. And my name popped up. So I'm thankful for that. I'm glad that, you know, my name is known like that.
That is exciting. How was the experience of judging those young people who, I know it's not their poems that they're reciting, but to take someone else's work and make it come alive. Tell me about that experience for you as a judge. And I know you've judged before.
I have, but only here in Rockford. So this was the statewide competition. So all of those, I'm going to say 16 youth who competed, they were from all over the state of Illinois, and that was just amazing in itself. And there were a couple students who competed from Jefferson High School right here in Rockford, so I was happy to see them. But just being there, it was exciting. I hadn't been back to Springfield in quite a while, so getting down there, getting settled in, and then and getting to the event, yeah, it was amazing. And Sheila Walk did an amazing job with the setup for that event, so I want to thank her here on this interview.
Now, I know that in the last couple of years, Rockford has done a lot of things when it comes to poetry. I remember when they first mm-hmm. kicked that one art scene off with a poetry prelude, and it looks mm-hmm. like every time you turn around, there's an event that's infused with poetry. Tell me about your life back home now.
Yeah, I kind of went silent for a while, and then I eased my way back into the scene. And as soon as I did that, you know, there was an explosion of opportunities. But I even go back to 98 when I came back to Rockford from Philly, and there wasn't any poetry events going on. So I quickly helped turn that around. So it was almost the same thing, except I didn't have to create any events. Events were already happening. So people would, you know, people were asking me to show up and being excited to see me. So yeah, doing a new monthly open mic with Inscape Collective on 7th Street. It used to be Just Good. My co-host is Kelly Joy Simmons, who's an awesome person, awesome being. And she hosts the first half, and then I jump in and host the second half. And that's going well. Amaze Books. I've done some stuff with David Peterson down there. Ars Publica with my friend Emily Kleinicke and Roni Golan, who's an artist. I've participated in Ars Publica. So yeah, all kinds of things. And also always in conversation with local talent in the area. So yeah, if you're an artist or a poet in town, there are tons of opportunities. So it's a good thing.
Now, you mentioned something about being in Philly in 98. Tell me about why that happened.
I was working at a nonprofit job in Wilmington, Delaware, and then an opportunity came to work for the Obama-Biden campaign in Philadelphia. So being that, of course, Obama, you know, out of Illinois, I was like, for me, that was community service, a way for me to serve this country in a way. So I signed up, went to a training in New York City, and then shortly after they sent me to Philly. And I was on the ground for about 30 days doing some get out the vote work in Philadelphia. And that was amazing. And of course, 2008, they won. So that was exciting.
Wow, that is exciting. Now, I was just thinking about Poetically Yours and how you kicked it off with Minneapolis is Burning. Now we are about, 4 years later? Mm-hmm. Tell me the climate in the country, not just in Rockford, but from a poet's perspective, what is the climate in the country when it comes to social justice and diversity and equity and things like that and inclusion? Tell me what your thoughts are on those things 4 years later.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I thank you for that, Yvonne. And I'm going to start off, since I've been heavily involved in writing about diversity, equity, inclusion, and providing some thought leadership. There are, especially the white right wing folk are going after diversity, equity, inclusion pretty hard. So they're making it known that they don't want that particular element of employment or understanding or being, you know, woke. They don't want that happening, just like, you know, the banned books thing. So the white right wing Republicans and whatnot, they're going after the DEI pretty hard. And some companies are relaxing their DEI focus. You know, it's like, I would compare it to if you're at a church or organization and you speak about anti-racism, nobody wants to hear it, or don't nobody want to face that or address it. So the same thing is happening with DEI in a sense, especially with the right wing. So people are fighting pretty hard for diversity, equity, and inclusion matters, and to make sure that it's a part of education, employment, and all those things. And then one thing I'm kind of disappointed in, that I think activists, we are sometimes or oftentimes we're reactionary instead of, you know, being on top of things and always raising our voices regarding what happened to George Floyd. Right now, there's crickets right now. You know, that same momentum, the same energy, the same activism is not alive right now, except for what's going on at college campuses and universities across the country when it comes to Palestine. You know, that's a new movement, and people are ramped up and excited and are marching and protesting and all of that. But when it comes to George Floyd and people of color dying at the hands of police, that, you know, people were pretty silent about that right now.
Why do you think that is, where it's kind of like people are silent if it doesn't directly affect them? For example, if there's a person who hadn't had to worry about their family member or loved one being in that situation, they turn a blind eye to it sometimes. What are your thoughts about that? And how can we work as a culture to change that? Because until we care, why are we asking anyone else to care?
Yeah, wow, that's pretty heavy. Yeah, and of course, yeah, there's that flip side where, you know, if you look at the hood, the ghetto, black-on-black crime, but even still, I think that for way too long, we've been followed, profiled, and harmed and harassed by the police, especially Black people and brown people, and it steadily persists. So until we learn to look at that deeply and more profoundly, I don't think we'll get anywhere in those things will continue to happen. And crime anyway, you know, there's white on white crime too, just the same. So there should be measures or policies in government, whether local or national, where if there's a hate crime, then there should be policies, you know, quick policies and legislation that gets right to that and shows the person who was guilty of that particular crime, you know, for the government to kind of make an example out of people like that, because the government has always made examples out of us, especially black and brown people. So how can we switch that and aim that at people who commit hate crimes in this country? I think that should always be in discussion, and we should always be working to make something like that happen. It's interesting that there's a city in Bellingham in Washington. They actually have anti-racism in their policy, in their government. So if the whole country could do that, then I think we'd be a lot better off.
All right. Well, I want to take a moment and talk about your poetry that you're working on these days. What's the climate for that? What type of work have you been doing? And also, if you would like to share something, that would be wonderful as well.
Sure. Yeah. I've been writing a variety of pieces. I started off a couple of months ago. I've been writing raps and recording new songs. And I think you've seen the link or links for that stuff. And I've eased away from that. So I'm back at writing poems, spoken word pieces for events. And even a new slam poem I wrote called I Don't Write Slam Poetry Anymore, because I've been talking and mingling with the slam poets in Springfield, Illinois about coming down there and participating. But I'm not a slam poet anymore, but I did write a piece to explain why, and that I still respect the slam poetry movement just the same, but I'm not a slam poet anymore. Most of my work is aimed at events or a social justice movement. So, and I think it's been like that for a while. So right now I'm writing for events, things like I have coming up on the docket, and that's where I am now. And then there's a new piece that I wrote called 4 Years Later, and I sent you that. And instead of, sharing Minneapolis is burning, I wanted to write something new to address where we are 4 years later after George Floyd was murdered.
I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah, it's called 4 Years Later. After 4 years, 4 years after George Floyd was murdered by a Minnesota cop, the police murders have not stopped. The stains remain on concrete after we meet our maker. The pressures are even greater. A former president is still a hater, still pushes hate, still equates we blacks and browns with everything dark or down. Where is the movement for George these days? Why are the skies still dark, gray? What do activists have to say these days? Where is the spirit of George Floyd now? Why aren't we fighting now? Didn't King, Malcolm, Medgar, and Harriet show us how? Are we too complacent? Why is activism reactive when George is dead? Isn't that backwards? We are waiting for the next traffic stop to name the cops who killed another sister or brother. We are still being othered, wronged, arrested, tested, tried. We still die. Mothers, fathers, sisters, families still cry. Where is the spirit of George Floyd in political halls? Why is legislation always being stalled or called out when it comes to black people? Our freedom, our justice, our equity, our communities, our schools, reparations. George Floyd died a victim. We are still being imprisoned. The black diaspora still lacks hope, a collective vision. There is still a long way to go. A lot is still missing. 4 years later, on to life, we are still gripping, because life in the United States for we blacks is still hard hitting. George Floyd's spirit sees, listens from the universe's extension. And that's 4 years later.
That's powerful, Christopher. And those are some facts. You don't hear about anyone talking about it except, oh, it's the anniversary. But it seems like things have come to a standstill with our voices and trying to just make a change. It seems like things come to the forefront when something happens. And I think it's very important to continue to talk about it. So tell me, how do you feel reading that poem compared to writing Minneapolis is Burning and seeing where you are now and seeing what has happened and what has dwindled down?
Yeah, I yeah, and it almost, yeah, 4 years. 4 years is not a long time, but it feels like a very long time. And sometimes I do write poems that ask questions because I really want to know. Yeah, what are activists thinking? What are they saying? Where in this country, besides of course Minneapolis itself, is the spirit of George? Why aren't people having tough conversations about what happened? And that was just 4 years ago. So I'm asking because I want to know. And if there are people having conversations about what happened about George and what's next, politically, I've been kind of detached from Minneapolis. I'm not sure what's going on there, but I'm pretty sure there are people still talking and hopefully fighting, you know, for justice. For justice, for freedom, for equity. Yeah. And we're always fighting, especially people of color. But yeah, where is the conversation around George Floyd right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to the conversation with you talking about not being a slam poet. I had the pleasure of speaking to a slam poet that I ran into when I was in LA. And he just talked about just that lifestyle. So I'm interested in knowing what your thoughts are and why you don't do it or why you are not interested in participating in that type of competition anymore.
Yeah, the brother Ed, I caught that interview. I listened to it. And yeah, I remember I was a judge at that event where Goddess Warrior Poet brought him here. I was a judge, so I got a chance to see him live, and he's a pretty good poet. I consider myself retired as a slam poet, if even if that's a thing. But yeah, I remember when I used to slam, even here in Rockford, or even at the House Cafe. I won a slam there one time in DeKalb, and that felt great. It was electrifying, and I got a chance to compete even against a friend who I beat out. But I don't really feel the need to slam anymore because, yeah, I think what's more important for me now. And not to take anything away from slam poetry, but because I know there is that my focus and ability to write poems like the one I just shared keeps me, I think, engaged in community conversations and interviews like this. I know, and you definitely hear social justice pieces and slam poetry competitions, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm not excited to slam anymore like I was, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, something like that.
Tell me about the judging part of it. I know you participated as a judge in some competitions. Do you still want to judge those types of competitions?
I would do that, yeah. And bringing up the statewide Poetry Out Loud competition, that was gratifying. And even though those young people weren't sharing their own pieces, it was still a part of judging. And I think, performance art should be judged in a way that helps bring some upliftment and empowerment to young people and older folks. So I would still judge for sure, because I feel like I still have a lot to offer when it comes to judging, especially when I'm still writing poems. So, yeah, for sure.
Now, talking about young people, I know that's something else that you enjoy doing. Tell me, what's your latest collaboration with the youth?
Yeah, that was going down to Springfield and judging that competition. That was actually, I take that back. There's a young woman here who's a bass player. Her name's Georgia. I created an event at Inkscape Collective where I brought her to the stage. A brother named Aubrey Barnes, you know Aubrey. Who else? Penelope Monet and myself. And I met Georgia at an open mic that I hosted. It was the first open mic I hosted this year, so I met her there. So I wanted to make sure that she had a platform where she can continue to be heard. And she performed at that event. She performed at the one at Inkscape Collective, and hopefully she'll come back out. Yeah, I definitely want to continue making these events happen where they're multi-generational, and especially where younger people can come and perform.
Have you had the opportunity to meet the Youth Poet Laureate and rock with the Trinity Rucker?
I haven't met her yet.
Oh, she's amazing, Christopher. You have to, if you get a chance, connect with her. And maybe if you guys can collaborate, that would be wonderful. I did a story about her when she was first appointed, and I have not gotten a chance to meet her in person, although I know she's been, you know, getting her way around in the city and taking part in a lot of the events. So that's someone that I wanted to put on your radar.
Sure, yeah. And I saw that she won. I think you might have posted it on, it was somebody that posted it on Facebook, and I was like, oh, cool. So I went and read the story, but hopefully I have to look out for her name. You know, and like you said previously, there are a lot of events happening around poetry in Rockford, and sometimes you don't even hear about stuff until after they happen. So I have to look out. Maybe I'll friend her on Facebook or connect with her, follow her on Facebook and try to see what she's reading next.
Yeah, or even her mother. Look her mother up. I think the article has her mother's name in there because I think she's 15, and I can't remember if she had a Facebook page. But I know with dealing with her, I normally would go through her mother. So maybe you can, and I cannot remember her mother's name off the top of my head, so I'm not going to try. But if you need that information, I can find it for you and send it to you later. Now, let's talk about the open mic that you do, the monthly event that you do at Enscape. How'd that come about?
Yeah, Kelly Joy Simmons, who performed at an event that I hosted years ago at a place, a former restaurant called Salvino's that was at the old Rock Tower Inn. So she had been coming to events, or me and her have been showing up at some of the same events lately. So she messaged me on Facebook Messenger one day and asked me, did I want to co-host a new open mic at Enscape Collective? So I said yes, and we sat down with Ruth Jackson, who was one of the main persons who was involved with Enscape Collective at the former Just Goods, and sat down and made it happen. So, yeah, our first one was on May 9th or the 10th, and that we had a really good showing. A lot of talented people and interested people showed up. And the next one is June 14 at Enscape Collective. So we're looking forward to that one. And it's a safe, inclusive space and another stage for Rockford area artists to come and be heard.
Yeah, I was there a few weeks ago with Dorothy Page Turner. I know that you admire Dorothy. You speak highly of her all the time.
Yeah.
She let me take a little part in her Reader's Theater, so that was a joy.
Oh, nice. How did I not know that?
Wow. I don't know. You know, it probably wasn't anything that I put out there, and it wasn't any. I wasn't doing a story or anything at the station. It was just, you know, we had her at the station. Was it February? I want to say. And they did the Reader's Theater there. And she's like, Yvonne, I want you to come and be a guest sometimes. And I was like, oh, so that was a lovely time. So that was the last time I was at Enscape. It's a lovely place. So tell me, Christopher, what is next for you?
Yeah, there's an event coming up Sunday here in Rockford. It's called the First Annual Black Men Excellence Gala. And I've been tapped by Durian Bogan, who created the event. Durian is on Facebook. He tapped me to write a poem and perform it there. So that's coming up. Looking forward to that. I'm actually Dr. Brandy Brown, who's from Rockford, Illinois. She's currently living in Peoria, I believe. Her great 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 grandfather, I believe, owned and founded Briggs Hotel, the first black hotel owned by a black person here in town. Years ago, she asked me to write a poem about him and his story. So I did that. So I'm now recording that, making that a video with a guy named John Ross here in town. I know his father really well. And that'll go up on an online streaming service where Brandy Brown has that research. So I'm doing that. And I got some trips coming up out of town later this year that I'm really looking forward to, where I'll get to perform or present. So, and some of those places are Unity Village, Missouri, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and then James Madison University back in Virginia. So,
oh, that's exciting. Now, you talked about recording, and then you talked about how you were doing the singing and things like that, and then you stopped and decided to just focus on spoken word. Tell me, why did you decide to make that pivot to just really focus on spoken word?
I think because of the opportunities that have presented themselves. And I love being in the process of writing spoken word poems. Especially being a rapper or a singer, being able to play an instrument like a djembe drum. There's something different about writing a spoken word poem. And I think the power of spoken word poetry can last a while or keep you in conversation, or you are always on somebody's radar. So I'm just always in the habit of it. And I just love the process. So yeah, it's working for me.
Tell me more about how it keeps you in conversation. Like after you recite the piece, then where does it go?
Yeah, I'll wind up walking off the stage, and then somebody say, "Yeah, I like that poem," and they want to dig deeper about the subject matter. Or I'll get invited somewhere else to share that same poem, or maybe a similar poem. So always being in conversation with people in the community, or even other activists and organizers who want to continue to confront social justice issues and inequities and all of that. So, yeah.
Now, I talked about the latest Youth Poet Laureate who just started her appointment, but the current Youth Poet Laureate, Jenna Goldsmith, have you done any work with her?
I haven't. And we met at Mays Books, thanks to David Peterson, one day. I walked into Mays Books and met her there. She had just happened to be there. So her and I kind of got to know each other. And then I had my 50th birthday party celebration at Inkscape Collective. I had her on the docket, but she couldn't make it. So we have yet to work together, but I think eventually that'll happen.
How did that go? I know I couldn't make it either. Your birthday is on Love Day.
Yeah, I like that. Love Day.
Your birthday is on Love Day, which every day should be Love Day. But how was that? Your 50th, celebrating your 50th.
It was amazing. It was amazing. So Jenna couldn't make it, but there was Aubrey Barnes, and then there was my good friend Jim Roberts, who showed up. And yeah, we had a really good time. Also, I think Georgia performed at that event too, I believe. But it was amazing. I think the right people showed up. People I've been knowing for years, and a lot of them are activists or organizers, community oriented people. So we had a really good time, and they brought a cake, and I blew out a candle, and especially thanks to my good buddy Michael Kearney, or Mike Kearney, he and I put it together, and it was a really good time, and I'm very thankful that it took place.
In regards to the Poet Laureate position, is that something that I think the first ever one you did go out, you put your name in a hat for it. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you are still interested in pursuing?
You know what? I think not really, because I was very fortunate in that my good buddy Stan Campbell was calling me Poet Laureate probably 20 years ago, way before there was a title. So I think that served me enough justice. And even when I go, I'm out to places, people call me Rockford's poet. And I like that just the same. And no, this is not a takeaway from the Poet Laureate position, but I think it's just out of respect. And even elders who see me call me Rockford's poet. So, or even the people's poet. I like that even better, the people's poet, because when I hear that, I don't need that title, Poet Laureate of Rockford, because of what I've been able to establish up to this point.
Do you think you might change your mind as the years go on?
Not sure. We'll see. I'll just say we'll see. Yeah.
Now, I know, Christopher, that you have an online presence and you have your website and other things going on. Can you tell me about some of the things that you're doing to connect with people, not just here in Rockford or when you go travel to other cities, but what are you doing on your online platforms to connect with them?
I'm on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is a huge platform for especially professionals. So I've been changing up my profile there to speak to social justice issues and to the creative arts or performance arts. So I've been making connections there. Just recently, I've connected with several folks out of Toronto, Canada, or Ontario. And I think Ontario or Toronto, that area, is overlooked when it comes to performance arts or the creative arts. So I try to stay connected to that area because I already have poet friends and the like out there. So making sure that my posts or even my outreach to people stays consistent and persistent, and that I can talk about issues too that are relevant to them just as much as folks here in the state.
I want to take a moment to talk about some of your other types of writings in regards to social justice. So I see on Medium you have something called A Look at Racial Justice Work, an essay. What prompted you to write an essay?
I think it was needed, and I'm also an essayist. I'm pretty much the consummate writer, so I love writing long form. So I wanted to take what I knew about anti-racism work and expound upon it, and also use it to maybe apply for jobs that are available when it comes to social justice work. I just, especially the white papers, I want folks to understand and to know that I know a lot about social justice work or anti-racism work, and that, you know, I can have a short, I can write a short blurb about anti-racism or social justice work, or even an essay. So this stands on top of my essay skills, just the same.
Noah, in this particular essay, you talked about the book that you read, Malcolm X by Alex Haley. How did that book impact you?
Oh, man. That book taught me probably my first lessons about how especially Black men, but in particularly Black people, are treated in this country. I had no idea until I read that book and read Malcolm's story, and of course learned how profound he was and still is, and how meaningful his work is. He had a heavenly birthday. May 19th was his birthday annually. So it's interesting that you asked that question. Yeah, just profound in the way that he told his story in the way and through Alex Haley, and how he was able to address the issues that Black people face in this country. Until I read that book, I knew a little bit, but that book impacted me big time when it comes to knowing about how, you know, the Black condition in this country.
Can you tell me, how has reading helped you with your writing? I hear a lot of times if you're a writer, you must read different types of things. And I know that you are well read. Can you tell me how that has helped you with your writing?
Yeah, even looking at when I was reading other people's poetry, even 20 years ago, I knew that I needed to reach another level of writing. So when I was reading Mary Baraka, Sonia Sanchez, Nikki Giovanni, Toni Morrison, Hakeem Adabudi, I knew that in order for me to reach their level of writing, I had to read. You know, I'm glad that I put my head in those books and read so I can get to another level of writing. Yeah, I think it's a definite. In order to be a good writer, you need to be well read. So, and I love reading to learn people's stories and engage in storytelling. And Toni Morrison, of course, is profound at that. So her writing and all those other people that I mentioned helped me become a better writer. And then in order to talk about anti-racism, social justice work and all of that, you need to know what's out there. You need to know what's happened. So I'm glad that even if I'm only reading an article online, it teaches me about what's going on in regards to issues in this country and abroad. So I need to be able to read and write about it.
Now, I don't remember us ever having a conversation about any books that you have published. Have you published anything? And if not, is that something that you want to do?
I have. And this is the 20th year of my first book. My first book is called Super Lyrical. Deborah Jo Howard, who I used to being the Poetic Justice League for America with, she formatted and helped me publish that book. So this marks the 20th year of that book. And I have other books that I published too. I know if folks Google me, Christopher D. Sims, poetry or books, then the other books will come up.
Interesting. I've known you for 4 years, and I've never heard you mention writing a book or publishing a book. Tell me about that process for you. Do you self-publish, and are you working on any other projects coming up as far as books?
I do self-publish, and I've used other formats to publish books, like online poetry groups or websites. I've gone through, there's a particular website that I'm trying to think of that I can't think of right now, but once again, if folks Google me, the book will come up. But yeah, a lot of self-publishing for sure. And then I definitely want to publish another book. It's probably time for a new book. I just have to sit myself down and put one together, because it can take a lot of time. And I'm always performing. So yeah, there's a balance that I try to keep to perform a lot, or, you know, to write enough to publish a book. So I'm always trying to keep that balance.
Now, when you publish your books, do you focus on like a particular theme or topic, or do you just do a collection and have all types of poems in there?
I try to focus on a theme. My last book that was published, it was a theme. It was thematic in regards to growing up in this country as a Black man. So when I can focus on the theme, then that helps me compile all the pieces that I need. So that's very helpful.
I like that. Now, Christopher, can you tell me, in regards to your social justice work outside of poetry, what are you doing now that you're back in Rockford? How has the job scene been for you?
I've had a couple interviews, nothing yet. So I've been online applying for gigs through LinkedIn, and I'm seeing more and more jobs that really apply to my skill set. So I'm doing some applying for new gigs, but I can't ever say I'm not employed, because I'm always working as a poet. So I'm receiving checks, you know, even performing or hosting that open mic at Inkscape Collective. Thankfully, Ruth Jackson there has been kind enough to pay me for hosting. I appreciate that when people not only admire your work, but they know that artists deserve to get paid. So checks here and there. And actually, I forgot to mention another thing that I have coming up that I'll be getting paid for too, is performing at the Juneteenth celebration in Elgin. So looking forward to that.
Tell me more about that, Elgin. I know that you did something else with Chastity. Am I saying Chastity Gunn? Okay. Had to take a moment. I know that I need to show my face in Elgin pretty soon in regards to the Sanctuary Poets and some of the work that she's been doing over the years. Tell me about that connection with her and how that's going. And I can't remember if I connected you guys or not.
You did. Yep. And I was going to say, thanks to you, Chassie and I have that connection. And actually, yeah, they brought me out to the Elgin Community College for the Poetry Slam there, and that was awesome. And that was in February. I really appreciated that. It gave me time to sit down and not only eventually I performed, of course, but I got to sit down and hear some college students perform, and that was awesome. I really love those opportunities. It gives me an opportunity to hear what they're presenting and hear what they're sharing. So that was great. And Chastity was there. We spoke and everything. And that whole event was great.
Now, tell me about your friendships and relationships with other poets. I know you mentioned Aubrey a couple of times.
Oh, man. Charles White here in Rockford. I think you know Charles. Charles is a great poet. Used to slam in college and whatnot in Louisiana. Charles. Ikonzi has family here from Rockford. I think Ikonzi is originally from here, but she lives on the West Coast now. A lot of poets I stay in touch with on Facebook. And then, yeah, the poets, Shatriya Smith, she's in Springfield, Illinois, that whole group out there. And then there are other folks that I'm meeting too, but even my, and if I reach outside of here to, yeah, my Brooklyn, New York poet friends, who some of whom you've met on the platform Black Poet Matters, them. So I'm always in touch with poets, some, you know, everywhere, but I definitely stay connected to my Midwest poets, and maybe we work together or try to scheme up things to work on together.
How does having those connections inspire the work that you are doing?
And I know that seeing them work as hard as they do, like Aubrey, CJ Empress Poetry Lane, and other poets out of that group, it's inspiring and very engaging. And I get to share their events on Facebook, which I hope is helpful, because I know, you know, you need bodies at events. So hopefully my sharing of their events and even my encouragement or comments is, it helps me stay connected and engaged with them in proximate ways. So
now, you mentioned the Black Poet Matters, and I know during the pandemic you recruited me to be a part of that platform as well. And I am not sure if I just faded or if the group faded. What's going on with that now?
Yeah, Charles, I saw Charles at an event recently, a Poetry of Pizza event. There's another event that has happened and is now a regular event here in Rockford. I think Charles asked me the same thing, and I think the group has just faded. I think we produced so much in that during the pandemic that maybe a lot of us have ran out of gas, and we need to kind of regroup and see what we can do next. And there was talk about even live events, but I'm not sure where that is.
Now, is there anything else you would like to share today? You have any more poetry that you would like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, maybe the slam poetry piece, since we talked about slam poetry. Let me find it.
Well, thank you. I didn't know if you wanted to share that. I was thinking he talked about it, but let's see. I think that I am definitely ready to hear that.
Yeah, let me find it real quick. Here it is right here. I've been printing out a lot of pieces lately since I've been performing a lot lately. This is the slam piece. I don't write slam poems anymore. I don't write slam poems anymore. I roar into microphones with fire. The desire in me is ferocious, going into hypnosis to demonstrate, to dare, to dream, to create, to craft, to surpass what I wrote the previous time. I don't write slam poems anymore. I soar into the land of syllables to orchestrate stanzas, demanding attention, helps me reach ascension, accelerating to dimensions where it takes a Buddha's silence to acquire amazing poetical visions. I don't write slam poems anymore. I score with word sciences, denying diction from tongues, hoping to develop lasting division. I need my poems to go on missions with soul force, sonic sounds, rebounding cellular compounds, to unify, to bring together, to astound. I don't write slam poems anymore. I pour into poetics language with lasting brilliance. Pundits or politicians are missing. I run words to finish lines with unlimited designs, mastering motion, the divine, historical timelines where a man, a marvel is designed, defined, dramatically on a grind. I don't write slam poems anymore. I graffiti vocabulary legendary in places where consciousness is necessary, primary, motivating the people when times feel rough, hopeless, scary. I recite rhetoric connected to the affected, because no more is the average person respected by the law, by the healthcare system, by landlords, by leeches online. I write to redefine what love is, what it means to be human. I don't write slam poems anymore. I write music, meditations, mantras, moments, momentum, medicinal magic, theatrics, freestyles, songs, saving materials, the lessons leading to miracles, aspirations, efforts, networks from my neurons to reach beyond the commercials on TV screens, beaming toxic energies, continuing the tradition of Eric B. and Rakim's Check Out My Melody. I don't write slam poems anymore. I let my blood pour onto the page, equipped with sound waves, symphonies, because too many brown and black people are locked inside jail cells, penitentiaries. I don't write slam poems anymore. I write homilies, promises, love letters, lessons, manifestations, creations with a purpose, words meant for service. I don't write slam poems anymore. I adapt messages murmuring in the back of my mind into coded messaging people can find to remind them of how beautiful they are, how much life is worth living. There are people still giving of their souls, their hearts. How powerful are the arts to start their days with positivity. I don't write slam poems anymore. I roar into microphones with fire.
That is wonderful. I mean, I could just see your skill, the wordplay, the alliteration. And that sounds like a slam poem, just FYI.
Yeah, I like that.
Like a slam poem. Did you realize that even though the poem is, I don't write slam poems anymore, it could very well be a poem that you might hear in a poetry slam?
Yeah. And I know slam poetry very well, so I knew the cadence, the delivery, the style is definitely a slam poem. So
now I want to go back and talk about a couple of things, a couple of lines that I took notes as you were saying them that stood out to me. The roaring into microphones. Tell me about that image.
Yeah, there's a poem that I have called Poetry That Gives Birth to Revolution. And I think you've heard it or I've recited it maybe on this show before. So the roaring into microphones is like, yeah, I have a message. I'm here as a poet for the people or other people. So I want to roar into this microphone so that people hear me and that I can say or am saying is impactful.
And then Poetical Visions, I love that. I actually have a poem called Poetic Vision, and I'm talking about this poem that I'm writing, and I want to take it there. But then I'm thinking they're not going to receive it. So I have to dumb it down a little bit. So it's almost like I have a poetic vision, but should I sacrifice my art so that you can eat off my plate? Tell me about when you said poetical vision. I know what that means to me, but what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think I might have used those two words before in a previous poem, but at this point, just possessing a vision of poetry or a poet, being on a mission, having something solid to say, and poetry that has clarity. So all of that together is what I think I'm saying when I say poetical vision. Yeah.
The other line that stands out, I thought this was very clever. Run words to finish lines.
Yeah. And I've been listening to a lot of hip hop rap lately, especially some new stuff about some seasoned artists. I think one of them might have sparked that, but I like for my words, my poems to have a lot of imagery in them. So you know, imagine running words to finish lines. You know, it's like finishing a poem. You know, I want to run this. These words to the finish line, you know, where I'm done and I can be happy with what I wrote. So, but yeah, if you're in a poetry slam and if you're running words to the finish line, and that might mean that you wound up, you know, in the last three. So, you know, using powerful enough words to help you win a poetry slam.
Oh, very, very cool imagery. And as a poet, it's kind of like, oh man, I got to sit down. You're like, to hear a poem like that, for me, and I'm hoping for other poets, it makes me want to write. And I think when I listen to a poet who makes me want to write, that means they got it. That means they're doing something, because I love to write, but do I make time and prioritize? No. And not only does it make me want to write, it makes me want to write it and write it again and get it to the point where it's shiny and not just something that I just wrote, got out and said, okay, here's my poem. So
gotcha.
I just want to, you know, give you your props on that and say, I love that poem and how you put things together and the imagery. And you know, there are some times when I listen to someone recite their poetry, I get excited. Is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners today?
I don't think so. I'm just, I'm definitely happy to be spreading my wings again on the poetry scene. And I'm looking forward to seeing what else comes up.
Thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Poetically Yours Extended Podcast. Listen to Poetically Yours every Friday on WNIJ and WNIU. Special thanks to the Nick Monte Trio Band for providing the music for this podcast. For Poetically Yours, I'm Yvonne Booth.